Here's your money briefing for Tuesday, December 17th. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. It's been 2 years since Bitcoin hit its all-time high of nearly $20,000. Well, since then, Bitcoin's value has fallen more than 50%. Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna will tell us what it'll probably take for Bitcoin to ride high once again. First, some money and market news you should know. Amazon has a message for its third-party sellers. You are forbidden from using FedEx Ground Delivery to ship Amazon Prime purchases. In a letter to merchants, Amazon says that FedEx Ground and Home on-time performance has declined, and the ban will remain in place until delivery performance improves. The shipping data analysis company ShipMatrix ran the numbers, and it says that during the week of Black Friday, UPS deliveries were on time about 93% of the time, and deliveries that Amazon made itself saw about 94% on-time accuracy. But FedEx deliveries were only 90% on time. Now, Amazon says its third-party sellers can still use FedEx's speedier and more expensive express service for Prime orders, or they can use FedEx Ground for non-Prime shipments.
From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow. That's google.com/grow.
For Bitcoin investors, December 17th is a dubious anniversary. In 2017, the cyber currency hit its highest level ever, $19,783. Investors from all walks of life entered the market, and so did gravity. Since December 2017, Bitcoin has traded as low as around $3,000 and currently sits at a level about 50% off its high. So where does it go from here? Let's bring in Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna for some answers. So Paul, Bitcoin has recovered somewhat from its low in December 2018, but there really hasn't been a lot of movement since then.
No, there hasn't been. And the problem is that in 2017, what you had was the culmination of several years worth of development in Bitcoin, not just technically, not just, you know, companies being formed and startups and businesses, and but socially as a movement. I think it's really important to remember that Bitcoin, as much as it is a technology, it was also a social movement. And in 2017, that exploded. So you had this very sort of thinly traded asset that suddenly becomes extremely popular. People jump into it and it drives the price up very, very high. While that was going on in 2017, you had this concurrent phenomenon called the ICO market exploding, the initial coin offering. They were basically trying to take the IPO model and transfer it over to digital tokens. Was not a bad idea, but the way it was carried out, it was extremely rife with fraud and just very, very bad practices. And while Bitcoin was reaching this peak in popularity, you also had this peak in just bad projects, nefarious projects, a lot of fraud. I mean, look, what happened was Bitcoin became valuable and it attracted a lot of bad actors. The problem now is that the good people that were interested and probably got burned have gone away, and a lot of what's left are the bad actors.
So you have 44 million Bitcoin wallets out there or accounts out there, and not very many of them actually are holding Bitcoin at this point.
A lot of those probably are people that opened a wallet, you know, downloaded the software or opened an account on Coinbase or blockchain or one of these other ones.
Hey, my neighbor made a lot of money. Let me try this out.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, made one or two trades and then just left the thing there. Mm-hmm. So what you end up with is there is a very small percentage of those wallets that are actually active. And that's a reflection of how much this cryptocurrency sector has become an insular product. In other words, it's a lot of people that are inside Bitcoin trading among themselves.
So it's like institutional traders?
No. That's kind of different. There are some institutional traders. That's the big, like, white horse hope that they've been waiting for, is that Wall Street's going to come in. That's something a little different. This is literally just people within the industry, within the sector, Bitcoiners trading among themselves. That's what's really left. You don't have a lot of outside interest. You don't have a lot of new money coming in. You don't have a lot of new people coming in. It's basically just all the people that were there 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 8 years ago.
So there's really nothing coming into that market to move the needle.
No. And look, there hasn't been, certainly in the last 2 years, I would say there has not been anything technically new. You have a lot of experimentation still. You have a lot of people trying to figure out what the technology can do for them. And I think that's an important part of this. A lot of companies have started experimenting with it. Governments are starting to look at it. You have a lot of that going on. But there has not, like, Bitcoin itself was a technical achievement. Digital money, online money, electronic peer-to-peer cash. That was a technical achievement. There had been people trying for 2 decades at least to build that, and nobody had been able to do it. You have not had anything new. You have not had any real signs of growth in this industry over the last 2 years.
So you had big banks gently entering the market, creating ETFs, the ICOs, as you mentioned. Those were seen as the next big thing, but they didn't really make a splash.
Well, right. And look, the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds, were seen as a great avenue to get retail investors into Bitcoin. Not one of them has been approved yet by the Securities and Exchange Commission.
If you build it, they will come, and they didn't come.
But the Securities and Exchange Commission will not let them build it. And the SEC has been very consistent about this. What they have said is that there is no transparency in this market. You do not know the level of manipulation of these prices. Because of that, this is not something that should be sort of readily available to mainstream investors. That's why the SEC has not allowed an ETF to launch.
So Bitcoin has had its fall from grace in the last 2 years. How about its competitors? Have they, in large part, had the same fate?
Yes. And the competitors, look, at this point, my personal opinion, and I've thought this for a couple of years, actually, is that there might be 6 of these cryptocurrencies that have a future. Might be 6. It's really probably 2 or 3.
There's a lot of shaking out to happen.
Yeah, that have a chance at a future. It may not happen, but they at least have a legitimate team behind them. They have honest developers trying to build them out. They have a vision. There might be 3 or 4 of those that have a real chance, I think. Most of the rest of them are projects that are never going to reach any kind of critical mass, or they're just outright scams. And there's a couple thousand cryptocurrencies out there. 99% of them have no future.
It seems like that this flatlining cannot go on forever. What is it that could trigger interest? Would it start with the SEC setting up a structure of rules so that people think, okay, now it's safe to go into the water? Is that where it would start?
Bitcoin came at a time when people were open to the idea of alternatives to the existing financial infrastructure, right? The system had crashed to the ground in 2008. Everyone was trying to rebuild it. The rot was there for everybody to see. People were very open to the idea of an alternative. Bitcoin comes along. People were open to it, so they adopted it. They start jumping into it. Bitcoin had a window of opportunity where the timing was right, the technology was right, and they had no competition to build something lasting. And I don't think they have done that. That's my opinion. And I know a lot of Bitcoiners that if any Bitcoiners happen to listen to this podcast, I'm going to get a lot of angry emails because they don't believe me, but whatever. They had a window of opportunity where they had the technology, the momentum, and they had the lack of competition. They had a field wide open to build a new type of money, and they did not do it. They fell into infighting. The scammers and the fraudsters came in. The whole thing kind of fell in on itself. And that is really what we're talking about here, the post-2017 high. What happened? That is what happened. And Bitcoin has not been able to regain the momentum it had earlier.
And the scams and the uncertainty and the muddy waters, that would scare investors away from any other entity on Wall Street or in the business world.
So, yeah, I mean, look, you now have a situation where for a couple of years they've talked about ETFs. The SEC won't allow one. You have a situation where for a couple of years they've been talking about institutional money, Wall Street money, big banks, family offices, investment advisors, financial advisors coming in, buying Bitcoin on behalf of their clients. That has not happened. But on a large scale, that has not happened.
But you still go online to shop, whether you rent a car, rent a hotel room, and Bitcoin is an option for payment. So there is some still interest out there.
In very few places.
Okay.
Very few places.
Has that dwindled?
Yes. In 2014, 2015, you had a lot of companies experiment with accepting Bitcoin as a payment option. Dell Computer did it. Microsoft did it. Expedia did it. I'm trying to think. There are a bunch of others. All of them have kind of quietly dropped it because it never took off for them. Were they too early? You can debate that. There's only a couple that have kind of kept up with it. There's a online travel service called cheapair.com. And I've talked to the CEO a lot over the years. They accepted Bitcoin and he loves it because it is good for his company. He has no credit card fees. There's no give back. There's no charge back. There's no danger of a chargeback. Every payment is final. So there are advantages for businesses and this guy loves it and he kept accepting it, but it has never become a large part of his business. Now, that being said, I do think digital money has a future. It really dovetails very smoothly with the way our lives are becoming. Our lives are much more now online. We spend all our time online. We buy things online. We do everything online. Digital money dovetails with that. And eventually somebody is going to figure it out and make it work. The question is going to be, who is that? Who's going to figure it out and make it work? Is it going to be the Bitcoin collective? Is it going to be a company like Facebook? Is it going to be a government that digitizes their currency? That's the really big question now in 2019 and going into the 2020s.
All right, that's Wall Street Journal cryptocurrency reporter Paul Vigna with us. Paul, thanks for coming on the show.
Happy to come on the show, JR.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm JR Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.